Hello, and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey, and over the past nearly 12 years, this podcast has taken on many forms, from interviews and audio diaries to cultural snapshots and expat reflections. You might notice some different podcast names mentioned along the way, but it's all part of the same journey, one that explores life, people, and stories from this fascinating region I now call home. If you're enjoying the listen, I'd love it if you left a quick review or rating wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others discover the show. And if something in the episode sparks your interest or curiosity, why not drop me a message? I always enjoy hearing from listeners. I always reply.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans, the podcast that takes you on a captivating journey into the heart of Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. Each episode, we delve into the rich history, vibrant culture, and hidden gems of this beautiful country. Through engaging conversations and personal anecdotes, we aim to bridge the gap between the Balkans and the rest of the world. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired, entertained, and connected.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to the Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast with me, David, where we normally talk to interesting people and hear stories from this misunderstood, heart-shaped country in Southeast Europe. But today is slightly different. It's the 13th of February, it's the 11th World Radio Day. And as you will know from following the blog plus the content I put on social media platforms, I've always been passionate about radio. Now, my initial plan for this week's episode was to write about the history of this United Nations launch project and how it affects Bosnia. But by pure happenstance, an old radio buddy of mine who's in Canada and runs a community station there contacted me and asked if we could chat about radio for his program on Midtown Radio in Kitchener, Ontario. I simply couldn't refuse. So here's David Harms in Kitchener and me in Chadarchany chatting about radio and why it's so important a medium. And by the way, this podcast is both a fun and serious conversation about community radio, and we certainly hope you'll enjoy it. So why not now press pause on this podcast while you grab a tea or coffee and then sit down for 30 minutes or so and join us.
The Living in Bosnia and Herzegovina podcast.
Hello and welcome to Midtown Conversations. My name is David Harms, and today on this World Radio Day edition of the program, I caught up with my longtime friend and radio mentor, David Bailey. From pirate radio to internet broadcasting, David has a long history in the radio business, working at multiple radio stations in a wide variety of places around the world. Over the next 30 minutes, David shares with us some of his insights into community radio, internet broadcasting, and the state of journalistic freedoms in 2022. Here is our conversation. There we are. Hello, David.
Well, hello, Canada. Long time no see, no time, long time no speak. But not missing the snow, man. I'm not missing the Canadian snow.
Yeah, it's a good winter not to to be not missing it. Yes, it's exceptionally cold here this year, and seems to be a tremendous amount of snow right now. But that is good. How is life in Bosnia Herzegovina?
Well, we've got years ago when I came here, that was when I first got introduced to cold and deep snow. Of course, you know, when I came over to spend the 2.5 years with you guys, then I really learned that Bosnia was like in the, how do you call it, the Pee Wee League? They, you know, but it, for me, from an Englishman, it was like a culture shock. But now we don't get very deep snow anymore. Cold to us isn't anywhere near like it wasn't. Today we've gone up to 14 degrees. And only the other day we were at -5. So I don't know, maybe you guys have still got, you know, your two seasons of winter and construction. We still don't know what's happening, but yeah, weather-wise it's a catastrophe, mate.
Yeah, winter and construction, and they seem to be overlapping seasons in the last few years. Yes. But nonetheless, we have this great opportunity of World Radio Day to catch up, and I thought it would be really nice to be able to talk to you about all things radio. I know, of course, you have a very long history in the radio business, working at multiple radio stations around the world for, I'm going to say, at least the last 25 years, but we'll let you clarify any of that. And I'll say to our listeners that that David and I first met while working at one of those stations a number of years ago, where you taught me a great deal about the practice of radio production. And of course, I'm grateful for that. And so I say it's fun now to be on the other side of the microphone and here talking on the air with you. So again, for agreeing to doing this. Okay, so as I said, you've been in the radio business for a very long time, but I'm sure you've been listening to radio for even longer than that. So first question, what is your earliest memory of radio in your life?
My earliest recollection is I'm in Southeast London in my Irish grandmother's living room, and she's got this old wooden radio. Nobody will understand it today unless you're really old, with valves. You know, you used to switch them on and then watch the thing glow, and then it would sort of like spring into life. No FM back then, AM. And we had like the BBC, which was as boring as everything. We used to call it the British boring whatever. And hearing pop music. And I just couldn't get that my grandparents would be listening to, what was it then, the early days of the Beatles, Rolling Stones and Everly Brothers and that sort of stuff. And these were radio stations that were on ships and other marine constructions around the coast. They were subsequently called pirate radio. And I listened to this and I just found it fascinating, not only the music, but, you know, how a group of 10 DJs would do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off on a boat. And it was just like amazing. They've made films about it now. So those are my earliest recollections. And doing actually what was shown in one of the films, I felt quite embarrassed about it. I tried to hide my face, is where the young boy or girl is in their bedroom with this sort of like large box, which was in a transistor radio, having it under your pillow so you could listen to it at night without annoying your parents. So yeah, 11 years of age, David, 11 years of age.
That's amazing. And did you, I'm trying to remember the stories from years gone by, but were you just inspired by the pirate radio, or did you get an opportunity to work in that a little bit later on?
Well, it was a bit of both, actually. I was inspired by it. For those that are listening, and maybe somebody will call in or send you a message, does anybody remember Radio Caroline and Radio London that has since moved to Canada? If you do, it'd be interesting to see what your thoughts are. But yeah, I was inspired, but, you know, 1967, it was made against the law by the British government. They didn't like to have freedom. my government at home doesn't like that even today, so nothing much has changed. But they made it against the law. Only one radio station survived. It went and anchored off the Dutch coast, and that was subsequently closed down. And, you know, myself and my friends at the time were hugely annoyed. I would have used a P word, but we were hugely annoyed at the time. And when I think back to this group of 14 to 15 year olds who, within a matter of 4 months, had learnt to make a medium wave transmitter with this massive valve in the middle of it. It's called an 801 valve. We taught ourselves to build these things. Health and safety, it was a nightmare. How we didn't kill each other. We started off, you know, to see if it was working. One of us would lick our fingers and stick our fingers on the top of the valve. And you got this massive shock. I mean, how none of us died from a heart attack, I don't know. And we started with these like record players that you had in boxes at the time that played 45s. And we used to open up the back and then we sort of like made a rudimentary mixer and we started doing our own radio programs. Great fun for young men and girls at that age. Caused absolute chaos with the police, caused absolute chaos with the judicial system. And we had tens of thousands of listeners. And, you know, when you're that age, what else do you need to stroke your ego to make you think that you're a superstar when you're actually nothing? So, yeah, that offshore radio both inspired me and I ended up being a pirate myself. So,
Nice
memories, actually. Thank you for taking me back there.
No, it is. And it's because it's I was reminded of a book recently. I think it's 40 Watts from Nowhere. Telling the story about a lot of the pirate radio that went on in the UK and all the sort of technological innovation that was occurring. It's really, I'm curious when you talk about like that rush, that feeling you get from it, is it from knowing there's a larger audience out there, or is it like the experience of just tinkering with all the different technology that seems to be, you know, a big part of that practice?
I think for us back then, we were so annoyed about it that we didn't realize that we would get into sort of like this activism. I think today you would say that we were activists. You know, it was just like we wanted to put one finger up to the government because it was like they'd taken, we'd loved it so much, us and millions of other young people. Not everybody went to do their own broadcasting, that's true. But you really felt that, you know, the adults, the grown-ups had just pulled off the worst naughty chair or naughty corner experience in the world. You know, we don't like you having it, you won't have it. And it was taken away from us. And it was to a degree where we said, well, if you won't provide that, then we'll do it ourselves. I have to say, 6 months after they closed those offshore ships, the BBC had changed and sort of like recreated that sound on land, but it was still, you know, hello, this is the BBC and you're going to listen to what we play. It was just weird. I never thought I'd be politically active and I don't look at it today. I just felt that, you know, together with the others, we were providing a service. And we felt pleased with it. When we were arrested, we didn't feel guilty. We weren't disrespectful to the police. In fact, at the end of it, you know, there were two bits. There were the guys that used to, on behalf of the government, track you down with tracking equipment. And then there were the police that had to enforce the law. And David, the crazy thing towards the whole of the end of this experience was the police used to ring us up and say, we're going to raid you in 25 minutes. And I kid you not, they used to do that. And when we used to say, why did you tell us? The answer was, my daughter won't forgive me if I don't give you half a chance.
That's nice. Really, really showing the power of the younger generation as audience. It strikes me a lot that this sort of like oppositional nature that a lot of community stations or stations in emerging democracies seem to sort of rise up in that tradition as something where maybe we're seeing more governments clamping down on media generally, but on broadcasting in particular. And I'm just wondering then, you know, when you sort of think about the state of radio today in 2022, how do you see it? How do you feel things are, you know, just the state of you know, journalistic freedoms and broadcasting more generally?
I'm actually heartbroken by it. And I'll tell you for why, because I don't know whether I got you know, I'm a baby boomer, so I don't know whether, you know, when I grew up, that I had this, I don't know, inbuilt thought that politicians were good guys and the state was, you know, looking after me. I question that now. But as far as radio is concerned at the moment, I'll quote the situation where we are at the moment in Bosnia. Terrible conflict that ended 26 years ago. Somehow it's bumbled along in some form of peace and tolerance. Reconciliation, I would say, is in the bottom of a bucket, but at least we've got peace and reconciliation. And with the international community, who are, I have to say, this is only my opinion, are as much use as a chocolate fire guard because they don't do anything. And we have a situation now within the three ethnic groups whose party leaders control all the media that is created in their own entities. And without exception, they have gaslighted their own ethnic communities in a way that I think, even back in the days of Nazi Germany, and we always, you know, criticize Goebbels for his way that he manipulated media. But I think even he would learn a few tricks from what's happening down here. The gaslighting is phenomenal. Watching how people who I consider to be open-minded, you know, with a wider vision, that they seem to be becoming more and more constricted and more, I won't say militant, but you know what I mean? Their view is no longer a healthy view. And there's nothing here that can challenge that, to put an alternative point of view. You know, let's look at you guys in where you are at the moment. You know, Midtown Radio is a voice. It's a voice for the community, from the community, and it discusses community issues, which I think is, you know, the nucleus of everything. You have an online presence and whatever. That is not allowed here. You will not get a frequency here, not even for a 2 kilometer radius of a part of a town. It will not happen. It cannot happen. And because those that are running the show just won't let it happen. It's a good case study to see what is happening here, to say, my goodness, let's not have it happening where we are. At least in the United Kingdom, as far as I'm aware, still commercial radio. Yes, it is commercial radio, but it is still providing an alternative service. And there are community radio stations. You know, the government allow community radio stations, you know, like that 5 kilometer broadcast radius for ethnic groups, for example, for minority interests and everything. And I think that is very, very important. And I think there should be more of it. The sad thing is that, as you know yourself, even to run a community radio station, you need a team of committed people. Volunteers will come and go. That's the sad reality of life. And then again, there's the money issue. I mean, a license doesn't come free. I know it doesn't come free in Canada, doesn't come free in the United Kingdom. And so, you know, you're once again limited by the amount of money that you can get. And benefactors aren't hanging off a tree. But it is very, very important. And I think for far too long we've been saying, you know, I did a project in Ethiopia and I really felt energized by helping them set up a station there. But, you know, then, David, that was what, 10 years ago I did that project. And here I am sitting in a country where I feel absolutely useless now. I do. I'll get through it somehow and we'll stimulate kids somehow. But, you know, this is not 2 steps forward, 1 step back. This is, you know, millions of steps backward. So what you're doing is very, very important, even in a developed country as Canada is.
It's encouraging to hear because, you know, we do certainly envision community broadcasting as the antidote to some of the more, you know, political or top down models that we're seeing. And I know, like the last time we talked, you were delivering a fair amount of this radio training in emergent democracies around the world. You mentioned Ethiopia as one. Are there others that you can tell us about? Are there places where you're seeing sort of some signs of hope?
I wish I could be positive, but that would not be the reality. I did some project, you know, helping stations in Armenia, in Azerbaijan, in Georgia. And whilst, you know, the people that turned up for the training you know, heart definitely in the right place, and use that training to get going. And the idea was that they would then be self-sustaining. So we set them up and we supported them, not me personally, I was just part of the setup team, but we set them up so that they'd have 2 years of funding to get going. And I think with only one exception, a station in Georgia, which is crazy because it's a reggae station in Georgia, fly that one past me, but it was working. They've all failed, not through being keen or losing faith. It's just been the fact that, you know, that the funding issues have really stumped them. And I think, you know, when you need to fund a media outlet, even though it's a small one, you do need to have somebody that is savvy in that department. And I think it takes a lot more energy to keep the finances, you know, to sustain the station, rather than it is to create, you know, the programming content, which is obviously very, very important. And I think not enough people understand that. And we need to be getting people and saying, you know, this community radio, there's two components. There's the creative, you know, and there's the financial, and they are equally important. And that's what we've got to do. But I know quintessentially, you know, community was like fluffy. You know, we're doing it, and oh, we don't need the money. We'll get round it. We'll have a fundraiser once a year. Great idea, fundraiser once a year. But you know, that money dissipates within 2 months, and then boom, bang, we're back where we are again.
Yep, same everywhere. It seems there's a couple of models in community broadcasting for the fundraising, and a lot of it is, as you say, like an annual fundraising campaign. Where they're, you know, soliciting funds from the general public in that. Been reading about other models as well, where they're using like a Heritage Foundation, for example, where they see it. This is in New Orleans, where they're, you know, they're dedicated to documenting and preserving the culture. And so they get sort of a, you know, a more sustainable patron in that type of model. That's something that's not happening from the government. Certainly there are arts grants and other sort of radio grants that are available for community stations, but it is, I fully agree with you. It's the biggest challenge is not making the content. It's paying for it, paying for the whole process somehow.
You know, I was thinking about, you know, what, you know, about Canada in particular, and it struck me, it will never happen, but you know, what I would be saying is, you know, what is important to people in Kitchener? And it is what's happening on their doorstep. It's, you know, the things that really matter to them. And yet down the road in Toronto, there's these big, massive commercial radio stations that serve the whole province, if not half the country now. And they sort of like dominate the marketplace. They don't, as far as, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure they don't talk all that much about Kitchener. There's a hundred other places, you know, around. And I think that if there was, you know, what government should be doing is saying, well done you, you're making massive money, you're the top commercial radio station in the country, we're fleecing you for all the tax that you make, because, you know, so you should, you're a business. But I think that these large media organizations should be legally obliged to take a percentage of what they make. And it only has to be 25%. Come on, there's only so much money that you can make. Capitalism has to come to a boundary at somewhere and say that 25%. I don't know what it used to be Chum back in the day. I'm sure there's another radio station now. But if it had been back in the day, it's to say to Chum, you have to put 25% of your profits into a responsibly managed fund where the community station from Kitchener or the community station in Markham can go and get some financial support, you know, so they have a bit of respite from the worry of existing to the more important thing of creating content. I don't know whether that will happen. It's most probably David in his pink glasses, but I think that's an idea that could be, I mean, you could fly it, couldn't you?
I'm wondering, like, you know, when we look to the future of radio, you know, in our respective countries or around the world, how do you see it competing with everything else that is out there now? Do you think there's still a home for radio in people's hearts?
I think radio has changed and it's constantly evolving. I would like to say that live radio will be with us in 50 years, but I don't think it will be. Podcasting at the moment, and you know, people will argue with me about this or discuss it heavily with me, but I don't think I'm wrong with saying that you know, while the vlog has dominated social media as a information delivery tool, I think podcasting is up there now, almost on a par, and podcasting will take over from vlogs. And I consider that podcasting is radio on demand, so that the term radio has not left that ecosystem. It's still in there. You know, you and I, when we talked on a previous project about podcasting, how powerful it is, because you know, it's a multi operational tool. In other words, you want to get a message, you have a niche, or you have a message, or you have a program about a particularly interesting topic. Not everybody can give the time in the day to have it when it's being streamed by the radio station, so from 11 till midday. Whereas on demand, in other words, a podcast, you know, they can listen to it whenever. They can subscribe to it. They can be alerted. Their devices these days automatically download the latest episode for them. And that takes a strain off them, and they can listen to it. Whether they're, you know, I still, when I talk to people, say, you know, the great thing about a podcast is if you're slicing a carrot at the speed that Gordon Ramsay does in the kitchen, and that's the only time that you got almost free, you can't watch a video at the same time, but you can slice a carrot while you're listening to a podcast. You can listen to your podcast while you're running in the gym. And, you know, in London at the moment, okay, pre-COVID this is, but that quintessential view of the pinstripe businessman or captain of industry with his bowler hat and his briefcase sitting with that massive edition, paper edition of the Times, where he takes up four people's seating places, right? Now, and it's coming back, these guys have got Apple EarPods or the equivalent, and they're listening to the content that they need from that morning's BBC News program. And they're getting it in such a wonderful way that, yes, they're interested in economy, they're interested in rugby, so they'll get that. They won't get the update about Novak Djokovic in tennis or anything else like that. And I think that's so, so powerful. And, you know, yes, it's called podcasting. It's a term we're going to have to live with, because I suppose radio on demand is too difficult. But I think that's where we're going. And one day radio frequencies might be switched off. I hope they're not, because I'm so nostalgic about it. But that's not what it's about. It's about the content. It's about audio content. And you know what? It's the theater of the mind, David. And that is so wonderfully powerful as well. And it's the threshold for entry is not high. The skills are simple in relative speaking. And everybody tells stories. You can go to any coffee bar in the world and everybody's being a storyteller there. And it's just telling stories. And I think it's a beautiful platform for doing it.
This is what I think is wonderful about community media of all sorts, is that ability to tell stories that are relatable to the audience. And it's just something I wonder with the increase of things like podcasting and any of the on-demand audio, that we get away from that collective experience. And we still get, you know, you get your content, I get my content, and the two will never meet. And so just, do you have any thoughts on what it means for, like, the implications for the community as a whole? If you remember back to the, you know, the start of our conversation and talking about the size of the audiences with pirate radio broadcasting, then what, you know, what kind of collective experience are we left with if everybody's sort of getting their own slice, their own content?
Yeah, I'm going to sort of like contradict myself now as well. You know, when you get into certain taxis in Banja Luka at the moment, certain drivers are consuming music that is delivered to them by Spotify or other streaming providers. I think that community radio would be the last traditional radio to leave, because it has that great impact about what is happening on my doorstep. And everybody's interested in finding out what is happening on their doorstep, you know, from where the latest clubs are, what the latest chances are for children, down to learning skills, right down to when the garbage is not going to be collected today because of the snow and it will be connected tomorrow. Very, very important information. I think if the data providers, the internet providers, have enough bandwidth and that they're responsible enough to give us the fastest that we want, then I think that we don't need FM or AM anymore, that we can stream on our phones. But that is not happening all around the world at the moment. The major players in the FM world are balking at it. There is a shift, I know. But I think it's just an educational thing. And if a community radio station like yours finds out that people are walking around in downtown Kitchener with their earbuds in and they're listening to your content, that's a very good sign. And it's just to work on it, to chip away at it and to say, this is where you can find us. You know, it's not that much difficult to say 99.9 on your dial or an Englishman in the Balkans.com/podcast or streaming or whatever. It's just a place to go. So I'll contradict myself a bit. I think that being online for community radio is the best place to be. If for no other reason, I know people want to be on AM or FM or whatever, but then the licensing fees and those costs disappear or at least diminish considerably. And that might be another way. I listen to all my radio online. And to prove a point, I keep in touch with what's happening in London, England by listening online. Obviously, I can't listen in any other way.
That's inspiring words to come back to. So, you know, we're hearing there's a future for radio, just not over the airwaves.
Yeah, I just, years ago, David, we moved from AM to FM. And now I think we're moving from FM to data.
To data.
Same story, different platform.
Yeah, and that's nice. It is. So, David, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to say thank you very much for chatting with us today and for everything that you've done, of course, in the service of radio throughout the years. No doubt through the training and education, you've inspired many people like myself and others to take up this cause around the world. And, we're grateful for it. If listeners would like to find a little bit more about you or the work that you're doing, what's the best way to read up or to get in touch?
Well, okay, I've got my 15 seconds of shameless self-promotion, so I'll go for it. I'm going to say this. If you put www, I know a lot of people don't do it anymore, but you have to do it on this occasion, right? www.anenglishmaninthebalkans, that's all one word, anenglishmaninthebalkans.com. You're going to come to a page on the internet where it says that I have a blog, and it says you can read it here first or you can subscribe. Right, if you click read it here first, you don't have to subscribe. If you want to subscribe, please just give me your email address. You don't have to pay for anything. It's all free. And it's a weekly update of what's going on in this country. From my experiences as an immigrant here, with lots of video links and audio links, etc., to what is happening into this very misunderstood country in Southeast Europe. And I also have a podcast, and you can pick up on a lot of stuff. In fact, I'm hopefully going to include young David over the pond into one of the next episodes. But I think you might find it interesting. It is a window somewhere else in the world. And you know what? How many of us can really say we do it, don't we? We stand over the fence and we see what the neighbor's doing and we find it quite fascinating. And that might be for you.
That's wonderful. Great way to end it. Thanks very much, David. All the best. And have a great World Radio Day in 2022. That was my conversation with international radio trainer David Bailey on the occasion of World Radio Day 2022. If you have any questions or would like to listen to this interview again, please visit midtownradio.ca or reach out to us on Instagram or Twitter at midtownradiokw.
David Harms in Kitchener, Ontario, and me here in the village, Inchardarchinny, talking about radio and why community radio in particular is so important, and hope that it's got you thinking more about radio and how important radio is, and even more importantly, why you should be thinking of supporting it. Well, thanks for listening. Do leave a review. It does mean so much to us. So wherever you're listening to this, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever, please do consider leaving a review, and do share this podcast with friends or anyone else you think might enjoy it. Oh, and if you'd like to support the podcast, why not consider buying us a coffee? And the link to do that is in the show notes below. So until next time, please stay safe wherever you are. because remember, these are still challenging times. And that's a wrap for this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed finding out a little more about both Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. If you've enjoyed this journey as much as we enjoy bringing it to you, please take a moment to leave us a review and subscribe to our podcast. Your feedback helps us tremendously and makes a huge difference. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic-Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans. So that's it for this one. Thanks for keeping me company. If you enjoyed the episode, maybe share it with a friend who might like it too. And if you've got thoughts, questions, or just want to say hello, you can always reach out. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast and help me keep telling these stories, you can drop a little tip via Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the show notes. Even a euro or two makes a big difference. So that's it then. Take care, and I'll catch you in the next episode.